Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison. That's Adam Pranica.
Hello!
I stepped on your introduction.
You did. I could, you know how you can hear people smile sometimes on a mic? I could hear you like wing a point at me. Like, like pow.
Bah! I was just, I was setting up the recording session here. I saw that it was like 160-something in the number of episodes. And I was like, holy shit. How do we keep this fresh after all these years, Adam?
Did you see also that this is the last episode before our tour begins?
Is it?
That is also the truth.
Wow.
If the show is still going on and the world has not... folded in on itself, and we haven't killed each other and ourselves. Uh-huh. This episode will be coming out on Wednesday, August 9th, Ben.
Our plan is for our murder-suicide pact not to work.
Right. Well, I mean, if there's ever a good time for a murder-suicide, let's do it after the tour. We put in so much work into this.
Yeah, we really busted our asses to get this tour in order.
That would be the dumbest murder-suicide ever.
I think that the thing to say about the tour is that it has sold very well, and there have been at least a couple of sellouts as of this recording. Check online, because we'll be letting people know whether there are tickets available at the door. One thing that people said to us is that in the summer, folks like to leave their weekend plans to the last minute. So if you need a plan B...
Their weekend plans and sometimes in Milwaukee, your Tuesday night plan can be a last-minute booking also.
Yeah.
All I'm going to say is if you want to meet Raz and Plavim, you got to come to that Tuesday Milwaukee show.
Yeah, you got to come to that show.
Raz and Plavim have no idea how instrumental they're going to be in that show. But I think it's only fair that we cause as much trouble for them as they have for us.
Sure.
We need to exploit them, Ben. Over and over.
I am drinking a delightful gin and tonic, Adam. This being a sweaty summer day, I needed to cool off a little bit.
I was inspired by your drink choice, so I ran upstairs and made my own gin and tonic. God.
I like that you're stocked to make a gin and tonic as a surprise drink for yourself.
Oh,
not
man.
Not everybody keeps tonic in the house.
Oh, yeah. We keep the tiny cans of tonic, like the little half can.
I love those little half cans.
That's the perfect can. And we've got a larder full of those little cans, and we're good to go at any point. You always want to be ready to make a gin and tonic, I think, because, like, is there a more inoffensive drink for the casual drinker? Like, you got company coming over, they surprise you. Better make a cocktail. What are we going to make? Everyone likes a gin and tonic, I think.
Yeah. I always wondered what a larder was for. Turns out it's a room full of cans of tonic.
Yeah, I think they got that, like the idea of a larder came from like medieval times when, you know, in medieval times it was incredibly difficult to keep tonic fresh. And so they would, like in the basements of their huts, that's where they would keep their tonic. They would salt the tonic, Ben.
Yeah.
Keep it fresh.
there was like a kind of a tonic pemmican situation.
Yeah. That is my least favorite flavor of beef jerky.
Do you put any stock in the theory that pouring room temperature soda or tonic over ice takes the bubbles out of it?
I had never heard that theory until you just laid it on me. I had no idea.
I think I heard them say that on like Bar Rescue or something.
And they said it as truth?
Yeah, like John Tapper was yelling at somebody that they didn't refrigerate their mixers properly or something like that.
John Tapper's like, now everyone knows that when you pour room temperature soda over ice, it loses its bubbles.
Yeah.
What my reality show presupposes is maybe you get to keep all those bubbles?
I love that show because of all the like beautiful composed shots. Like they'll have a perfectly symmetrical frame and then they'll do a long dolly shot and it'll land on another perfectly symmetrical frame.
Yeah. What's your take on Tapper?
I think that he is probably a really talented businessman and definitely a very entertaining person to watch on TV, but a lot of the bar concepts that he comes up with are a little bit busy for me.
Yeah, I kind of feel...
Like, the idea of a concept as a concept, I kind of already reject. Like, this bar doesn't have a good enough concept, so we're going to come up with a new concept.
It feels like any concept is a variation of a bunch of shit on the walls, right?
Right, yeah. It all, like, the common denominator for all of these bars is TGI Fridays. And yeah. I don't see that being a great long-term play. Like, there's no culture in any of the bars that he leaves behind.
And maybe that is the culture. The culture of the cultureless.
Yeah, the pastiche culture.
Yeah. I just, when I watch shows like that, they are so entertaining to watch, but I can never put myself in the position of the bar owner and feel like I would ever enjoy that.
I know.
Because Tapper is just stepping all over you. Like, you are a failure. That's why he's there. Like, and yeah. So you better be ready to eat big old plates of shit. You better be ready to put that shit on the wall.
Your employees are all going to get fired, but then rehired in a tearful reconciliation.
Those tearful reconciliations are my favorite. My favorite form of reconciliation.
Well, reconciliation is a theme that is very present in the episode we watched today, Adam.
Do you think?
It is. Shall we get to our episode?
I think so, Ben. That's enough of diet, let's drink about it. Let's flip the station to our show, season 7, episode 10, Inheritance.
The entrepreneur has pulled up to a Federation world that is having... got kind of a constipated core, like an impacted core. It's all hard in there.
That can be so uncomfortable.
Yeah, it hasn't had a satisfying movement in a long time, and they're looking for some digital stimulation.
That's just the worst. I think the one thing you could say about me is that I have too many movements.
Mm.
My movement be frequent.
Yeah, the symphony of your life is...
The symphony of my life is flatulence. I should really see a doctor.
This is the earliest ding we've ever had, Adam.
Delightful.
We start with a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
And we introduce Dr. Juliana Tainer and Dr. Pran Tainer. Pran is an alien from this planet. Juliana is a human, and they are the planetary constipation experts that have beamed up to the entrepreneur. And they're explaining the problem, and they wrap up the meeting. Picard says,
"We've assigned you quarters during our time here. Please make yourselves comfortable."
Which is really just code for your planet wasn't in the budget.
Yeah. You know, it's like December right now, and the plants at the hardware store are looking pretty bad, gonna be honest.
Yeah. We didn't want a bunch of brown ferns to be what this planet looks like. So
the relationship we have with the dentist office down the street has sort of deteriorated in a way that we can't just go over and borrow a ficus anytime we want.
They've come up with a plan, which is that they're going to drill into the planet and then like install some equipment deep under the surface that will draw plasma in from space and reliquify the core, which will allow it to pass a movement that will get things back on track.
This concept really blew me away, Ben, because if starships can shoot phasers into planetary cores, is this planet unique because its crust is soft and a phaser can penetrate it down to the core? Or could any starship shoot a phaser into most planet cores? And if that's the truth, then is every starship a planet killer?
That's a good question. I don't know. I hadn't thought of it. I mean, we know that the fastest way from one side of a planet to the other is through the planet core. So presumably some planets don't have anything in there.
You remember that movie, The Core? Remember how terrible that was?
I think I've only caught bits and pieces of that on basic cable.
Bits and pieces are all you need, Ben.
Yeah, it seems bad.
But this really made me think, like, if this is canonical phaser, then then why does a space bad guy ever need a super weapon? Let's just set that down and maybe return to it later.
Fine. Fair enough. As the meeting wraps up, everybody walks out, and Dr. Juliana walks up to Data and is like, "Hey, no, nothing? Don't recognize me or anything?" And he says, "Should I?" And she drops a bomb on him, Adam. This lady with big-time crystalline entity killer vibes drops a bomb on Data.
"I am your father's, brother's, nephew's, cousin's former roommate."
She's like, "You haven't seen On Golden Pond, have you?" "I am Airsat's Catherine Hepburn."
"Don't be such an old poop. Billy might get hungry."
I don't mean to say that to diminish this actress's performance, which I thought was great, but she definitely had old Hepburn vibes to me.
She does kind of have old Hepburn vibes. I can dig that.
Yeah?
Yeah. She's had quite the career, it looks like. I'm just clicking into the thing. It says she's been in stuff as recently as 2014.
And, you know, a sort of a handsomer older lady.
Yeah.
We should probably name check her. We're talking about her so much. Her name is Fionnula Flanagan. That's a first name, but that could be tough in certain circles, I think.
Certain playground-based circles?
Yeah. Certain playground-based circles with real, like, obscure medical problem knowledge.
Are you thinking fistula?
Yeah, Oprah Winfrey is really, like, raising a bunch of money to help with the fionnula problem in certain third-world countries. Yeah. You know what we need is that drop. Like, we've got sitcom laugh drop. Mm-hmm. I believe every once in a while we have the sitcom O or boo drop.
Sure.
But what we need is that thoughtful, not quite a joke, drop.
I think you'll provide that at least a few times every episode yourself, Adam. I do that all the time.
People always say that. Everyone always says, Ben is a very generous laugher. Adam is not. Adam does not laugh at Ben as much as Ben laughs at Adam. It's an atrocity. I don't understand it.
You just have a very silent laugh.
Not a generous laugher. I do. That's just the thing. I hope you know how funny I feel like you are, Ben.
Stop licking my ass, Adam. It's great, because the good thing is when I get a real belly laugh out of you, I know I've really sunk one.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I hit the three.
Yeah. You leave that arm up.
What's the big reveal, Adam? Have we even said it?
Boy, we really stalled that bit of trivia.
We want to spend 10 more minutes on it?
Fionnulus, like, Data, don't you recognize me? I'm your mom. And Data's like, no. And then we throw the theme song. I think this probably qualifies as a Chekhov's mom, doesn't it?
Oh, you mean like if someone claims to be a mom in the first act, you have to shoot the mom by the third act?
Yep. like the version of this is like something's up with this mom. Like this can't be a true mom if you introduce mom vibes in the first act. In the cold open, I mean.
Data has taken a big page out of the Ronald Reagan playbook in this episode. He's all about that trust but verify game.
He's about denying AIDS, but also trust but verify.
He's like, hey, I'm a paragon of conservative values, but also I funded death squads in South America.
I am incapable of embarrassment.
I mean, people feel like I am a qualified, intelligent person, but no one can be sure if I wasn't racked with dementia during the last 2 years of my administration.
I've been lionized, but I put a lot of stock in the opinions of my wife, who regularly met with a psychic.
Yeah, I mean, can we just say, like, Nancy Reagan was probably, like, Sylvester Stallone's mom? Levels of crazy? I think so.
Oh, yeah. And she was also probably running the country for 2 years.
Hmm. And yet, even now, I yearn for those days.
They're having like a couple of whiskeys in 10 forward, Data and his mommy. And she's like got a pretty good level of detail. But it's really well written because she's got a lot of great headcanon for why Data doesn't have any memories from Omicron Theta.
Yeah.
Like, why he doesn't remember ever being activated in Soong's presence, why he doesn't remember any of his life before Starfleet found him.
Oh, there's a reason for that. We wiped your processors after we finished refining your programming.
But she also, like, will kind of, like, latch on to details of his backstory that Data divulges and kind of like build on them.
Why don't you tell me what you do remember and then I'll fill in the gaps.
Which is a little bit of a psychic thing, right? It's like taking something and acting like it kind of came from you.
Right.
So she's kind of cold reading him a little bit. And so he's like, well, like this seems like a thing, but it also there's no Juliana other than this one from back then. And she's like, well, that was me. I was Soong's wife. I helped develop you. I'm essentially like the other robotics genius that somehow Commander Maddox doesn't live inside the ass of.
Juliana just goes into like really explicit detail about how well she knows Noonien. Every little fold.
She's on a first name basis with Noonien.
She's seen the Noonien. Data does that thing where Juliana puts her hands on his and then he just sort of recoils. He needs more evidence. She is providing a ton of evidence, by the way. Like, she's doing the psychic tricks. All of her headcanon seems credible, but Data's like, I need to take this to Ancestry.com. Before I'm willing to, like, start a relationship with this woman.
Yeah, and apparently the console for Ancestry.com is engineering.
I thought the same thing. Like, what's Data doing, like, surfing the internet at work?
I mean, he's, like, a pretty high rank, so he, I guess, has some leeway to do that.
Data's like confiding in Geordi that this has happened just now and 10 forward. And Geordi has one of the funniest, like unintentionally funniest lines. He's like, Data, why would anyone pretend to be someone's mother? Like, I'm imagining him projecting his own weird relationship with his mom, which happened only a couple of episodes ago, and yet goes totally unremarked.
Yeah, shouldn't Geordi just, like, shouldn't he give us, like, a two Mississippi staring wistfully off into space?
At least you have a mom. And then, and then he just, like, looks at the warp core pumping for, like, 5 seconds. Yeah.
Surfing the internet at work, man.
Yeah, like, Data doesn't even try to alt-tab back to, like, whatever gauges he was ostensibly reading in the moment. Geordi's a fairly permissive boss.
Is Geordi the boss? I think Data's got... They're the same rank, right?
Yeah, but I feel like in engineering, Geordi's the one calling the plays, right?
Yeah. Data's on Geordi's turf. I used to go edit for this advertising agency here in New York, and there would be like a post-production producer that would bring me in. And the guy that ran the post-production department would just sit there like in this open office plan office for everybody to see playing World of Warcraft all fucking day. It drove me so crazy.
Look, like I dabbled in MMORGs or whatever they're called in college. Like I understand
your experimental phase.
I understand the appeal, but I think you got to leave that at home, right?
It seemed crazy. I was like, I know what I'm getting paid, so I have to presume this guy's getting paid like significantly more than me.
Oh, that would make me
so
upset.
And they're asking me to stay here till midnight editing. Ugh. This guy's leaving at 7 p.m. Probably to just go home and continue gold mining or whatever the fuck they do.
Can I say fuck that guy? Because fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
That's not cool.
The worst.
I don't like having my phone out in any work context unless it is explicitly shown that I am doing phone stuff about the work thing that we're doing. I just don't think that's a good look.
Yeah, it's very unprofessional.
Yeah.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurseth the disease. You'll have to go again.
Geordi, I guess, sort of convinces Data. Like, there's some... Data's doing some ancestry in engineering, and he finds evidence that, you know, sure as shit, she was on a transport ship with Noonien, and, like, the timeline matches. The timeline matches in a sort of Oliver Stone kind of way, right? Like, Noonien is on the grassy knoll opening his umbrella. Juliana is, like, behind the fence. Like, you could make the case that her story holds.
Right.
And so Data goes back
to... It's all circumstantial, though. Like, there's no...
Yeah, there's not, like, security cam footage of them together. This is all text-based proof.
There's no marriage record.
There's no dick pic.
If you want to prove that you're my mother, show me a dick pic.
Juliana shows Data a picture of her, like, Lindy Englanding Noonien Soong's dick. Like, like pointing with one hand, thumbs up in the other.
That is, I think we did it, Adam.
Was
that
the bottom?
To the bottom.
Yes.
Oh,
your laugh, like. I've told my wife this a bunch of times. Like, my wife has a laugh, and then she has a laugh when she's laughing at something in a mean way. You have a laugh, and then you have a laugh at something where I know you're deciding whether or not we can keep it in the show. Which I love. That's my favorite laugh. You know what I can't wait for, Ben, is the Reddit picture of that being photoshopped.
Oh, no.
Please don't make that picture. I'll say that right now. Like the headcanon is enough. Thank you.
That is a guaranteed way to get somebody to make that picture, Adam.
This is a loose show, Ben. This gin and tonic might be the official beverage of Greatest Gin in the short term.
Oh, man. New pod fluid game.
Yeah, I'm halfway through mine, and I'm... I'm at a cruising altitude.
Oh yeah, you're halfway through.
Check this out. I made a big one. Oh shit! You want to go make another?
I could do that.
Hit it.
Are we just doing all drunk episodes now?
I don't know, man. It feels good.
I'll be right back.
All right.
All right, so the kind of parallel storylines here are that they're going to, like, administer this milk of magnesia to the planet, and Data is getting to know this woman who claims to be his mom. And they sort of, you know, like, they're working very closely with each other.
There's a dam that breaks with Data and her. Like, Data's super open to the idea of bonding. And one of the ways that he chooses to do that is to invite her back to his apartment. And he plays a little violin for her. And she's like, guess what? I play viola. Maybe we should do a little concert together. A little mother-son concert.
It's a funny scene because it's like, I mean, there are many moments in this episode that are conspicuously done for the cheapest possible price.
Mm.
And when she announces that she needs a viola...
You don't happen to have a viola?
I could replicate one for you.
He, like, just kind of, like, walks off the right-hand side of the frame.
Computer, please replicate one viola.
And you hear the replicator sound effect, and then he walks back on with a viola.
I wonder if you could choose a temperature for the viola in the way that you can choose food temperatures.
Viola, Stradivarius, lukewarm.
That would be fun. Juliana's like, what the fuck, Data? You burned my hands with this thing.
Ow!
One of the things that Data shows his mom is a picture of Lal. Juliana's like, this is your daughter? How exactly did that
happen?
Why'd you
let her cut her hair like that?
Data's like, I made her, which makes her my daughter, which makes you her grandmother.
Mmm.
She takes this as sort of the gut punch it is.
He says, she's my daughter, and she slaps him. And he says, she's my android, and she slaps him. And he says, she's my daughter and my android.
She's like, is this all you have left of her? And Data, like, produces her head. I like the idea that Lal's head could be on the shelves next to the Stradivarius and all of his other, like, weird ephemera.
Yeah, where is Lal?
That's what I'm saying.
Did they put her in a torpedo and shoot her out?
I think Lal's
body... all the souls I've encountered in my travels, hers was the least human.
Of all the souls I've encountered in the universe, she had the worst haircut. And that's really saying something. Yeah, she's hurt by this. But hurt, but like, I feel like a little bit impressed also. She's like, you know, Data, it's no joke trying to make those positronic matrices. You know, you can't just like fiddle around in there expecting to make some life. It's not easy. It wasn't easy when me and your daddy made you. We made you and Lore, and then like a third. We were making robots all the time, and not a lot of them baked through all the way.
Listen, there's a guy called B4. You'll find out about him later. He's the worst.
Yeah.
A lot of feelings have come up for her, and they have like a little violin practice, and she talks to Data about like the circumstances under which Soong and she left Omicron Theta. And she says that she made Noonien leave Data behind. And it is like the biggest, most emotional confession. It's like she's carrying this around like she has... She, like, sentenced her own child to death. She had a terrible Sophie's Choice and felt like she chose wrong.
This actress felt pitch perfect throughout the episode, except for this scene, when she turned and ran and then, like, sort of flailed her arms on her way out the door. I felt like... everything was appropriately emotional until she turned and ran away.
Yeah, and they could have just cut that, you know? Like, she really got a juicy role here and played it super well. And if they had just cut that, it would have been pretty flawless.
There's something about that story that isn't quite right, though. And I think it's because even in the smallest of escape pods, like, you could pack his head. Like, there's there's room for babies in arms and android heads in any commercial escape pod, Ben.
Yeah.
And that's where the story just sort of lost the thread for me.
Ma'am, no, it's just a small personal item and one carry-on. It's not two carry-ons, okay? We're going to have to gate check that.
You don't want to gate check the head wherever possible.
I'll just drink it here and I don't need to take it on.
That head's just going to roll down the belt as it's going up into the cargo hold.
I am the cutest of all. You will assist us. I am the cutest of all. You are all.
She's having a really tough time. I mean, let's get a very emotional reunion. And you're sort of forced to wonder, like, what? Like, she's been following Data's progress, like, reading up on him, I guess. He's following his Twitter or something. And I like this character so much, and I just wish we had any understanding of why she never reached out to him.
Right. I mean, ostensibly, it is because of her guilt. And then, like, the way that she displayed that guilt was so dramatic that we're supposed to feel like, oh, yeah, well, she feels really dramatic feelings about it. But I don't know. Data's special. I think you got to reach out to him if you're the mom.
Right. I mean, here's how I would headcanon it. I would have written in a thing about, like, I found out about the trial and Commander Maddox, and I just didn't, like, that guy seems like such a prick. Like, keep him away from me. I'm not gonna make my existence known. You know, I'm not gonna put it out there.
I love the idea that the Maddox Data trial is like the OJ trial for its time. Like, it's played on all the subspace channels. You got that admiral as Judge Ito.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
Lavoie as Marsha Clark. She's got some Marsha Clark vibes.
Yeah. Riker taking Data's arm off, back and to the left, back and to the left.
Yeah.
So they're down in one of these caves that they've drilled. They've been, like, punching holes down to the, like, I don't know, medium deep layer in the planet. I'm sure that's the geological term.
That's the sexual term.
Yeah, they've gone past the just the tip layer of the planet, and they're in the medium deep.
They're at the not so deep layer.
They're in the just like that layer.
The not so deep layer is purely theoretical for you and me.
Sure. I've heard people talking about it in adult cinema, but I don't know if it's kind of like the hyperbole of that genre or what.
There is no hyperbole in adult cinema, Ben.
Oh, no.
Not to my knowledge.
Well, anyways, they're down there in the place we're used to. And they've got they're like firing up the equipment and getting everything ready. And Dr. Juliana and Dr. Pran are down there with Data, and they're just like sweating bullets because this is like a freshly drilled hole in the ground. They drilled it with phasers, so it's hot AF down there. And they talk about the Omicron Theta thing, and Data's like,
if I had been your biological offspring, would you have left me on Omicron Theta?
My feelings aren't going to be hurt if you tell me. And like her explanation is basically like she was worried that he would be Lore if they turned him on again. And so he's like, well, wait, but like if I was like a baby, if I was like a real boy, wouldn't you have taken me with you whether or not I was Lore? And she's like, listen, dude, if you were Lore, I would have had to dismantle you. Like, I had already done that with Lore. That shit fucking destroyed me. That was the worst thing I ever had to do. It killed me. I had motherly feelings toward him. So we left you behind because I couldn't face the reality of what we were doing.
There's
which is
like,
pretty heavy shit.
There's a stigma against pit bulls that like I get, but I also don't get. You know, I guess it just depends on your nature versus nurture camp. But I totally get her deal about, like, we made a lore and it ended up being a lore. And we were afraid of you also becoming a lore. Like, her reason seems totally sound to me. Like, you don't want one of those guys hanging around. They're creepy as hell.
We just recently did the DNA test on my dog and found out that he is part pit bull.
Really?
Yeah.
You did an Ancestry.com on your dog?
We did like a DNA test.
Turns out Darwin is part Native American.
That's where he gets his tenacity.
Yeah. Here's my question, Ben. What are you supposed to feel after hearing this story, and what do you feel? And are those two things different?
Well, I think what I'm supposed to feel is that this is a very tragic figure who kind of ran away from a problem and has lived a life that is semi-regretful of that fact.
Hmm.
But what I do feel is, let's have a violin duet.
They do some real Devil Went Down to Georgia shit in 10 Forward. And did you see who Riker
has... Are you going to talk about Lieutenant J?
I am. Riker's got his arm draped around her. Is it any surprise that Riker would steal a woman away from J.L. Pipes? I'm not surprised.
I think that Lieutenant J is just a fucking player. She like used Picard up and spat him out, and now she's gonna ply her ways with Riker.
If anyone in the tertiary crew has Ro Laren vibes, it's Lieutenant J.
Yeah.
She gets what she wants. She takes it by force if necessary, and we know Riker likes Ro. And if you can't have Ro, you love the J you're with.
I love that song.
They typically shoot performance scenes in 10 Forward differently. Like, this is an over-the-top, from-the-window perspective here.
It's like a,
it feels
it's
fresh.
Like a Frakes playbook shot.
Yeah, it really is. Frakes didn't direct this, though, did he?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, way to get high. Way to get wide. During the recital, you get a super close-up on Data, and he's sort of eyeing his mother askance.
He has picked up on something that we have not picked up on.
Right.
And it is probably something to do with, like, you had a lot less hair in the last scene. So what's up? Are you doing, like, the Beverly Crusher thing, or how's this work?
Smash cut to Six Bay, and Data's like, so, Beverly, if you were to rank how HIPAA compliant you were on a scale of 1 to 10, would you say you're more of a 4? Because I'm going to need you to be like a 3 in this case. I'm going to need some records about my mom, and I need you to not ask a bunch of questions about it.
And Crusher's like, well, for you, Data, I'll violate almost any doctor-patient confidentiality.
Yeah, what the fuck, Beverly? I guess this is no surprise. Like she's doing autopsies when she's not allowed to. She's willing to bend the rules of medicine.
Yeah.
For herself or anyone else, it seems like.
So they're in the middle of looking at the scan of Data Mom, and she like doesn't look that unusual on the medical thing. But
does she have discrete organs? I feel like when you're Beverly, that's the first thing you should figure out on any scan.
Yeah, well, it is the first thing you should figure out on any scan, but Beverly doesn't know what the word discrete means.
In any definition.
I don't know if we can leave that in the show, Adam. That was just too good of wordplay on your part.
Oof. Really connected on that one.
All right. They are looking at this shit. They get word over the radio that there's been a bad cave-in down on the planet, and Data is like, suicide mission, I'm on my way.
Not only that, I'm bringing the oldest person on the ship with me.
I'm bringing
Stand
my
aside,
mom.
Stand aside, able-bodied.
So, yeah, Data and his mom show up in the transporter room, and Dr. Pran, her husband, is coming off of the transporter pad with a buddy, and they're both, like, pretty shaken up because there was a cave-in, and Data and Dr. Julian beam down. They find one of the jumbo crayons has been knocked over in this retread cave that they've beamed down to.
And, do they have to use red crayons when they're inside the core as opposed to the blue crayons when they're on the surface?
Yeah. Like it goes from like blue and then there's like yellow. And then as you get closer and closer to the core, you go like a burnt sienna to red.
See, my reference was a rectal thermometry joke. Not sure if you got that, Ben. Red is for butts. No?
Man, I didn't even know how deep we could go.
She'll fly apart, Ben. Fly her apart, then.
They get the plasma inductor back going. And they got to run back to the crayons to beam out, and they're running, and the part of the cave that they have to run through has collapsed, and it's just a big drop-off before they could get to the crayons. And Dr. Julia's like, we would never survive this jump. And Data's like, I bet we fucking can. And so he grabs her by the arm and forces her to jump off the ledge with him.
We are going to have to jump!
They sort of Thelma and Old Louise this.
Yeah, and that's the end of the episode.
Haven't we seen Data gather someone in his arms and jump off of a cliff before? I feel like this is a thing that he's done.
Did he take somebody up in his arms one time and do a big jump?
I can't remember.
There was that episode where Pipes and Beverly were down in a cave and Data jumped down to join them. Was that the Echo Papa 607 episode?
It was. He's only ever soloed the cliff jump. He has not tandem cliff jumped before like he did here.
Yeah. So he jumps down and he lands on his feet and then he turns around and Dr. Julia is lying in a couple of pieces on the floor. But we see that there are LED lights blinking where Gore should be.
Yeah, she's made of Christmas lights.
You don't know it, but you are full of stars.
Her husband doesn't know he's been married to a real doll, Ben. Captain Picard, you may have noticed that one of my real dolls has boarded your ship. I think you'll find her verisimilitude to be quite extraordinary.
She is very convincing. Perhaps matched only by Rashad in terms of workmanship.
I think you will begin to notice that my best work has been the old real doll. A wholly owned subsidiary of Kevin Oxbridge Real Dolls Incorporated. She sweats like an old Persian. She has gray hair like an old Persian. She gets tired like an old person.
When you're using a real doll for all of the various things you might use it for, if it breaks out in a sweat, that's just a reassuring thing to see. It really adds to the realism of the experience. And that's something we're very proud of over here at Uxbridge Old Real Dolls Incorporated.
Sweat reassurance. That's the That's the Uxbridge Real Doll Reassurance Guarantee.
We have taken the real doll out of the sweaty, uncanny valley.
Over and over, we received complaints about our real doll's ability to sweat. We have answered their calls.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
this is a moment of inflection for Data, right? His mom's on the bio bed. She's clearly a robot person.
Geordi and the doctor are nerding out over her. They've got the hood up.
They're like, holy shit, like she can cry. She can sweat. Like she can secrete.
She's way better than you, Data.
Basically, the most impressive thing is her ability to produce fluids. I was thinking about this, Ben. Like, if you were a robot and you didn't know it, you must poop, right? You must poop and pee. So, like, she's eating and producing scat. That's incredible.
Yeah. That's like that that big art installation, the cloaca. Do you know about that thing?
No. I thought this was a bit.
There's this art installation. I think it's in Europe somewhere. And it's called the cloaca. And it's like a huge, huge, huge machine that fills up an entire room. And it turns food into poop.
Whoa. Yeah. I could do that.
Yeah. That's like the apotheosis of art I can do.
That's what country is this? I'm going to guess Germany. Please say Germany. You must seize the Scheisen button.
It's even more German than that, Adam. It's a Flemish Belgian neoconceptualist artist named Wim Delvoye.
The only thing more German than German is Flemish Belgian. I've always said that.
Yeah.
I think we've really gone everywhere this episode, Ben.
It's been a journey.
So it's like decision time, right? Because they get around the McLaughlin group and they're like, we've got a woman in Six Bay who doesn't know she's a robot. Should you tell her? And Data's like, well, I'm sort of two minds on this. Like, if I told her she was a robot, I wouldn't be alone anymore. Then we would be like, mother son mother boying it around, like mother botting it is what they'd be doing. He wouldn't be alone in the universe anymore. It'd be great. But then
is
Troy
this before
is like,
or after he talks to Soong Hologram?
I think Soong Hologram happens after, but I'm not sure, and I'm not sure it matters sequentially.
Yeah, because Data talks to a Soong Hologram that's like that they find like a chip in. I think this I think the hologram happens first. They find the chip in her head, and Data runs to the holodeck and boots it up, and Soong is like, "Hey, Data! Like, this is great. I recorded like a couple of different messages, but I'm super glad that it's you that found your mom. So here's the deal: she is a robot, but she's based on your real mom." And when she died, I downloaded her consciousness and put it into this robot, and she is going to age out like she would have if she had not died.
He's like, here, watch this weird Johnny Depp movie that really turned out awfully. Like, watch this terrible Johnny Depp movie. That'll basically bring you up to speed on what I did here. It's a little bit Jack Crusher vibes, isn't it?
It is a little bit Jack Crusher vibes. It's Jack Crusher vibes combined with bad Johnny Depp movie where like a weird portion of it is about buying up a small town and doing a lot of construction there.
You're listening to The Greatest Generation, the foremost transcendence Greatest Generation podcast. No one's done that before, Ben.
You mean made a transcendence podcast? Yeah, we've really cornered the market on transcendence podcasts.
As we've wandered through the valley of the shadow of the Greatest Generation, I keep thinking about how you make another Greatest Generation movie with the cast as old as they are. And I feel like this unlocks it, Ben. The idea that Soong made a robot that could age naturally makes me feel like this is how you get the crew back. Like, everyone else is old. The problem was Brent Spiner. How do you account for his aging? What if Data and I guess the B4, like, what if the B4 was booted up with this aging program? Then Data could join the rest of the crew. Then we'd have a new next-gen movie.
Yeah, so CBS, like, get your buddies Ben and Adam on the phone, and let's talk about something.
I'm ready to make a movie, Ben.
I'm ready to get in your little pocket. If it means co-writing and co-directing a movie.
If it means having final cut on a very valuable science fiction franchise.
Yeah. If it means we get to hang out with LeVar Burton one more time.
LeVar Burton and us are total buds.
Yeah.
He'll vouch for us. Ask LeVar.
He probably vaguely remembers coming on this show.
It was in no way a junket for him. So Troy is riding for the act of cruelty position. She's like, look, if you think you've been a person for your entire life and then you're told you're a robot, that could have some consequences that you don't predict. Maybe that would be a cruel thing. Maybe you don't do that. So like Dane is sort of pulled in a couple directions.
Yeah, you're taking away from her the thing you always wanted.
Yeah, and that summary of the issue I thought that was especially deft.
Troy should have been a lawyer, man.
Yeah. She lawyers Data here big time.
She lawyers him big time. And Picard just kind of plays the like cool dad that's like, hey, like you put your foot in it and it's gonna be tough, but you just gotta figure it out and we're gonna support you.
Yeah. Yeah, so the button on the episode is Data like folds his mom's forehead shut after putting the chip back in, wakes her up, and she believes that she fell off the cliff and broke her arm. She broke a bone in her arm, specifically, and that's how you know Data's not ready to tell her that she's a robot. He walks her to the transporter pad. He has a goodbye befitting of... that has the right amount of emotion between a robot son and a robot mom who thinks that she's human.
Yeah.
And that's it. My question to you is, why does she go home? What's waiting for her on Altrea? Like,
well, she's got that husband. He didn't
die,
did he?
Yeah, but he's got like whole cauliflower ear. He seems like a little bit of a weirdo. Like, yeah. If you just found your son after forever and you just made up with him, I thought she would have rowed harder for hanging out on the ship a little longer.
I guess it's just the promise that he'll come see her the next time he has some vacation hours built up.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll definitely get that.
Definitely. Next season.
Yeah. Did you like this episode, Ben?
I really did. I think that there's like a couple of plot holes that you just have to look past. But I think it's a fun little exploration of the Data timeline and a really cool idea that it really like plays with the idea of like trust and affection, because she's asking him to trust her on like kind of a whopper of a thing early in this episode. And his gut is not to until he can find some kind of corroborating information. But you're also forced as a viewer to wonder, like, what is in it for her? If she's like playing some game with him, like, is she really something else and like just trying to get in with Data because of what Data is? Is she some crazy that read about Data and is like trying to get close to him?
Is like a super fan.
Yeah. And it's written with that, like pregnant with all of those possibilities. And it really does a great job of kind of like taking a bunch of fun headcanon about like how Data got from being a newly built android on Omicron Theta to here, and like how she got to meet up with him, and like intertwining those threads with all of these emotional valences and making a great story out of it. I think it's a really strong episode.
I think so too, for as many reasons as we see and experience for the episode, and also as many as we don't see and have to sort of headcanon. Like, Pran is married to a real doll. And the entire McLaughlin group is like, should we tell Juliana that she's real, that she's a human, or that she's a robot? But no one no one debates whether or not to tell Pran. Like, and shouldn't that be part of the conversation? Does Pran deserve to know?
Dear Savage Love, I recently found out that a friend of mine is dating a real doll. He doesn't know, and I am wondering if I should tell him or not. Thanks.
Dear Penthouse Forum, my wife and I are both in our 60s, and she is still insatiable. And I mean literally insatiable.
I never thought I'd be writing into Penthouse Forum.
I feel like I'm in a lot of trouble right now because because I cannot quench her sexual thirst.
Even 24th century boner pills,
dear Penthouse,
do not
Forum,
give me enough stamina.
I'm so tired. I am just so tired. Help me sleep. Yeah, like no one looks out for Pran. And I feel like that is the missing link in this episode, right? Like, that's the thread that is untied, is what happens to him. To the degree that Juliana beams down by herself. Like, they just totally... Pran's an afterthought here.
He's an afterthought. I almost, like, wonder why they felt the need to include him as a character. Like,
yeah,
what is he doing to drive the story forward?
There was next to nothing for him to do.
Were they just like, okay, like, all we have is a couple of scenes on the ship and, like, one scene in a fucking styrofoam cave. We need to add, like, a character to make it seem like we spent any money on this episode?
Frakes is like, look, you could pay another guest star, or you could just roll that into one of my episodes. What do you say? I don't really get his reason for being. In a way, and I only say that because I feel like he could have a very real reason for being.
Right. Yeah, he's not even in the last scene where she beams down. It's like, has he beamed down already or what?
I don't know. Like, what if he was a robot too? You get the sense that you don't really know how many of these there are out there, because maybe Juliana has been programmed to know a certain thing that isn't the truth also. Like, in the same way that Data only knows some of the truth, like, maybe Soong made a whole fleet of these things, and we can never know how many there are.
Maybe Soong sent us a priority one message, and we just need to check it.
All right, I think we should check it.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a couple of priority one messages here. And the first one is a commercial message.
Whoa!
Goes like this. Pro wrestling that way it's supposed to be. The West Coast Wrestling Connection out of Portland, Oregon brings you some of the best pro wrestling in the world every week on YouTube and locally on PDX TV. Catch us live in Portland and Salem. Don't worry, no glass tables were harmed in this P1, so watch us every week. See if you can find the drunk Shimoda in the ring or the crowd. Follow us on social media at the WCWC or use hashtag the WCWC to keep up to date on everything. Whoa.
As you were reading that ad, I booted up one of the videos on YouTube.
Yeah?
This is fucking great. This is like real legit wrestling in a real legit ring.
Really?
Yeah, it looks great. Oh, they've got, like, entrances and entrance music and like, faces and heels and bits and... Oh, this
cool.
is great.
Are they doing, like... is it, like, backyard wrestling or is it, like, higher level than that?
This looks like it's in a... In like, a building. Like, in what looks smaller than a basketball arena. Like... But, like, way bigger than a hotel conference room. It's not, like... It's hard to describe. It looks like there's hundreds of people here.
Man.
This is a legit amount of production. It looks like it's in, like, a room the size of a trade center. Like a con-size room.
Cool.
Wow. You know, Portland is just down the road from me, basically. I want to check this out.
Yeah. There's no reason you shouldn't drive 3 hours to go check out the WCWC.
I love wrestling.
And if you're further afield, you can follow it on social media.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Thanks for hipping me to something new to do in Portland.
Yeah.
Ben, our second priority message is of a personal nature. It is from Lauren, it is for Gina, and it is not about wrestling. The parenthetical is Kevin voice. So here goes. Gina, Lauren wants me to tell you that you died in a terrible accident 8 years ago. The good news is you're one of my fine real doll products.
Oh no!
The Gina model prototype is one of the most advanced in my line and comes equipped with the ability to add numerous attachments of various types. Congrats on your death. You've just been real-dolled.
Very timely.
Wow. Good job, Lauren, for choosing the Uxbridge-centric episode.
Yeah.
Ben, if you died, would you want your consciousness to be put in a real doll?
I think so.
I think the idea of living longer is fairly attractive to me, real doll or not.
Yeah.
But let's be clear, I would not want to be placed into a real doll and then used as someone's fuck toy for eternity. Like, that sounds less cool. To
I'm
be clear.
I'm down to be a fuck toy.
It's not like you can feel it. Well, congratulations to Gina. Great message by Lauren. If you have a priority one message of either the commercial or the personal nature, you can take it on over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where we will read your message in or out of character for the low, low price of $100 for personal messages and $200 for commercial messages. Ben, what is this but a great, great way to support the ongoing production of our show? Thanks, guys.
Yarmouk, Angelad, and Tanagra.
What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, if you're like me, you were born in the 80s, and THC was vilified by teachers and police officers and members of the clergy and politicians, and it really got ratcheted up to a fever pitch. So I think it is fair to have a little bit of trepidation around this kind of thing. But I think for a lot of people, a microdose of a cannabis product is actually a great thing. And if you are interested in seeing why it is so ridiculous that the world went so reefer mad for so long, I encourage you to give microdose gummies a try. So get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code SCARVES. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVES for 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code SCARVES.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Ben?
What's that, Adam?
Is your Shimoda a real doll or a synthetic?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I gotta give it to Dr. Juliana Tainer. I think that the thing that is silliest about this character is the fact that she's gone as many years, like decades, as she's gone without reaching out to Data in any way.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Like, come on, like, you only live once. It's such a Shimoda move not to have a connection with your progeny.
And yet, Ben... like, family estrangements happen.
Like, yeah.
There are times in my own family when I go longer than I would like without communicating with some or all of them. So, like, it sucks. You get into a pattern, and that pattern continues, and it's hard to bust out of it. So I get it, but I don't get it.
Yeah, like, I think that in general... family estrangement is something that we all experience to a greater or lesser extent. Like, there's always people in your family that are really hard to get along with, and I think that it's, like, valuable to push past that. And the idea of just kind of, like, quietly going into the night without ever reaching out to your son and only ever connecting with him because your planet got really constipated is pretty sad.
Yeah. The mother has to be the bigger person, right? You can't expect Data to make an emotional decision. Well, Data also didn't know of her existence. It's only up to the mom. Like, it's not going to happen if the mom doesn't do it. Like, yeah. Usually in matters of family estrangement, there is some shared responsibility, but in this case, it's just Juliana.
Did you have a drunk Shimoda, Adam?
I did, Ben. I really, really did. Ask any performer or stand-up comic or improv person who the worst person in a crowd is, and they're going to tell you. They're going to say, like, birthday party or bachelorette party, like... because these are the people who don't go out to shows very much. They don't get the social cues. They don't understand how to act in public. During the Mother Boy recital in 10 Forward, there is clearly a person wearing a birthday hat on the right side of the frame. I don't have the time code on this, but there is a person like... third or second row on the right who has got like a yellow birthday cap. And I'm just like, you do not want to go to the emotionally fraught mother-son recital if you're not used to going to recitals. That's a bad place for a bachelorette party. It's a bad place for a birthday party.
This is my night.
Right. You guys are playing too loud.
Always the bridezilla, never the bridezuki.
Yeah, so my Shimoda is birthday party lady. Hey, why don't you take it to the holodeck where you belong? Why don't you walk down the hallway, get on the turbo lift to deck 8, get into the holodeck where you belong?
They don't have a birthday party program on that holodeck, Stuart.
Yeah. Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is season 7, episode 11, Parallels. Returning to the entrepreneur from a competition, Worf finds reality changing and is troubled when no one else seems to notice. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
Ben, there are two episodes worth watching in season 7. It's Parallels and it's All Good Things. This is On My Mountain. I love this episode.
You didn't think the episode we just watched was worth watching?
I believe it was worth watching, but it didn't go on my mountain.
Okay, so you're using hyperbole, and I just want to call attention to that.
Well, thank you for calling attention to that, Ben. There's only room enough on the mountain for a couple of episodes, and in season 7, this is it. I fucking love this episode. I rewatch it all the time. It's great.
It's a good one.
One of the rare Worf episodes that's not all about his family history. Like, let's give Worf a bottle episode where he's just being Worf. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
It works. I'm excited to see it again and to talk about it.
Okay, let's talk about it sometime soon, Adam.
Ben. Sometime soon, I hope people talk about this very episode. They can do that in a number of places, like on Twitter, using the hashtag GreatestGen. We also have places to discuss on Reddit and Facebook. You know what those places are. I don't even need to tell you. We got groups, pages, r/MaximumFun/GreatestGen.
You've got the Wikia if you need to get caught up on any of the deep, deep inside jokes. Come out and see us live on tour. We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for our other music.
Can't believe the tour's next week, Ben. I am excited, but like the nervous kind of excitement that Owen Wilson talks about in Armageddon when he's getting strapped into the spacecraft. Like, it's going to be good.
Yeah. God, I fucking love Owen Wilson.
Me too.
With that, we will be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. And an episode of The Greatest Generation where you get a little fainty and then you open your eyes and Adam is over there and I'm over here.
Only Ben would be overheard flaming his juniper berries when, just after saying that he's going to go make another cocktail. Like, you can't even call it pretentious, right? It's just a man making a really great cocktail for himself. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.